My dad was a blue collar worker and he got me into the union working in the local high schools cleaning as a janitor, right? I had benefits, I had a paycheck. And one day I was working on the graveyard shift because as the new guy, that's all you can get. So, you know, I think it was 11 at night to 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. And one of the guys that had been there for a long time, he came up to me and he said, "Oh, you're a lifer now." And I didn't know what he meant by that term. And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, you're here for the rest of your life now. You're in the, you know, you're in the union, you're in." And I say it like I have goosebumps still when I tell that story. It feels like I'm in that time and in that actual moment. And I quit the next day. And dad was not happy about that, of course. And he said, "Well, great. What are you going to do now?" And I said, "I don't know, Pop, but I'm not going to do that. I'll figure it out." And I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I was paying attention to my instincts, which, you know, I've gotten better and better and better at over the years, right? Is just, I don't know what I'm going to do, but something is telling me not to do this. So I'm going to pay attention to it. And then eventually I got into...
Hello, hello, everyone. Today, I'm joined by someone who has mastered the art of building businesses that put people first. From scaling an automated startup to over $600 million in annual revenue in just 5 years, to co-founding global investment partnership and international venture spanning real estate, energy, and cryptocurrency, Danyon Daly has proven that when you create unforgettable customer experiences, success follows. He's now the founder of Aim High, where his mission is simple yet powerful: helping leaders increase profit by putting the customer back at the heart of business. Dan, it's absolutely an honor to have you here with us. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to spending some time with you today.
Same here. So how about we first get started with your story? I first saw your clip on the School of Hard Knocks, where you described your journey from being a janitor to where you are today. That's incredible. Could you speak more about that, please?
Sure, I'd be happy to. You know, full disclosure, that School of Hard Knocks, completely unscripted. I was literally walking with a coffee in the morning here in Los Angeles, and I heard this voice behind me saying, "Sir, sir, do you have a second?" And normally, I mean, I would never turn around, but I turned around completely unscripted. And just those guys are doing a really amazing job of kind of sharing information that is really usually only available to the 1% type of people with the masses. So that was a great opportunity, and it led me to people like yourself, right? So fortunate enough, I think it has, it's got over 200,000 likes already, 230,000 likes and over 30,000 shares. So it's just people are gravitating towards the story. And the story is a true story. It's I came out of high school and at 17, 18 years old, I was one of those people that I was not sure what I was going to do. And everybody was asking me, "What do you want to do with the rest of your life?" Which is a really big question. And I didn't know. And my dad was a blue collar worker and he got me into the union working in the local high schools cleaning as a janitor, right? I had benefits, I had a paycheck. And one day I was working on the graveyard shift because as the new guy, that's all you can get. So, you know, I think it was 11 at night to 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. And one of the guys that had been there for a long time, he came up to me and he said, "Oh, you're a lifer now." And I didn't know what he meant by that term. And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, you're here for the rest of your life now. You're in the, you know, you're in the union, you're in." And I say it like I have goosebumps still when I tell that story. It feels like I'm in that time and in that actual moment. And I quit the next day. And dad was not happy about that, of course. And he said, "Well, great. What are you going to do now?" And I said, "I don't know, Pop, but I'm not going to do that. I'll figure it out." And I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I was paying attention to my instincts, which, you know, I've gotten better and better and better at over the years, right? Is just, I don't know what I'm going to do, but something is telling me not to do this. So I'm going to pay attention to it. And then eventually I got into automotive sales And I had a friend of mine that was running a dealership. He said, why don't you come and, you know, sell cars? You know, you're great talking to people and you love cars. You're passionate about it. And I said, dude, I'm not a car salesman. You know, I wasn't even thinking about it. And it was the best, most rewarding thing I had ever done in my life. And had a career there for about 20 years, started in sales, learned from some really great people, hustled, outworked, learned what to do, what not to do. And I went from sales to finance manager, sales manager, general sales manager, general manager. By the time I was 30, 31 years old, I was one of the youngest general managers in the country at the time. And I had a very successful career in that business. And about 6 years ago, I had a meeting with somebody here in Los Angeles, and he's big into real estate and sports entertainment. He said, I want to get into the automotive world. And what I want to do is change the customer experience. You know, I love cars, but it's never fun buying a car, servicing a car. And I want to make it an enjoyable experience. And the first store that he bought was a little tiny dealership. Wasn't even a dealership at the time. They had about 10 cars in stock, 4 or 5 employees, and they were working out of a mobile home trailer, an RV. And he said, listen, I'm into real estate and sports entertainment. I don't really know that much about automotive. Go do what you do, right? He gave me the power to go out and build something with his support. And within 5 years, we had grown to 7, 8, 9 different dealerships, different brands, some of the very high-end ultra-luxury cars to some of the lower-end, more affordable, everyday type cars, and grew to almost 500 employees and $600 million in annual revenue in just 5 years. So really just 100 miles an hour every day with the full ability to make decisions, make recommendations, share my opinion, and build something for him. And that's what we did. And during the last year or so of working there, they were looking at selling the dealership. So I was trying to figure out next steps for myself. And I had always been a fan of real estate. So it took me into 2 different things. It took me into consulting with Aim High, which is my automotive experience, helping other dealerships create unique, memorable customer experiences that build brand loyalty, and Global Investment Partnership, which is real estate investing internationally. So right now, most of our portfolio is based in Europe and short-term rentals. We're working on a very big project right now, a private equity fund, which is hospitality real estate, and it is eligible for the Golden Visa in Portugal, which a lot of people are familiar with it. What it basically does is you invest 500,000 euros in pre-approved funds in Portugal, and in about 5 years, you get permanent residence for yourself, your spouse, and your immediate family. So it gives a lot of people the opportunity, especially in the United States, which is the number one investing market into Portugal, to go and retire and live that European lifestyle that they've always wanted to do. I've had a wild ride, and I feel like I'm, you know, just getting warmed up.
Incredible. When you started out on your journey, were there things like doubt or fears that crept in? And if they did, how did you handle them?
I think, I still have doubts and fears. So to answer your question, did I have them in the beginning? Yes, because I still have them today, right? I think what I'm getting much better at every day is acknowledging them and then moving past them very quickly. Whereas, you know, in the beginning, I was letting them dictate my decisions. So, you know, I'll give you a very early real world example. I was doing really well in automotive sales at this one dealership. And I had been there for about 2 years or so. So a substantial amount of time I invested in the customer base and the people. And a lot of the managers had left and gone to different dealerships. And one of them said, well, why don't you come and go to this other dealership with me and work here? And I was like, why would I ever leave? You know, I have a customer base I worked so hard to earn, and I'm doing really well here. Don't try and fix it if it's not broken. And something just kept coming back to me to try something new, take a chance, right? And eventually I listened to it. And to this day, 20 years later, there are still people that I started with 20 years ago that are in the same dealership working there in the same desk. And I've had my own journey, right? So not that there's anything wrong with the decision they made, just a different path, right? So, you know, early on, plenty of doubts and fears. I still have them today. But early on, I made the mistake of letting them make the decision for me. And then at some point, I had this kind of light bulb moment where I sat down one day and I wrote all the bad decisions I thought I had made in the last 20 years, the top 10 that came to me. Oh my God, you're so silly. What did you ever do that for? And I wrote them down and I looked at each one of them and I really tried to take myself kind of back in time best I could to why did I make that decision? And they were all based on fear. It all kept coming back to you stayed here because you were afraid to do something different, or you stayed in this position because you were afraid to try something different. So what I started doing is listening to that, acknowledging it, and then doing the opposite just to see what happened, right? What's the worst that can happen? So I said, all right, I'm getting this feeling. I should really stay here. It's 9 to 5. I'm working 2 blocks from my house, but I'm not really satisfied here. So I'm going to do something different. And in my humble opinion, that is one of the big differentiating factors between the 1% and the 99%. The 99% are still trapped in the matrix. They're wrapped up in fear. And they're in the maze, right? And they do the same thing every day and rinse and repeat. And, you know, for me, I started paying attention to those instincts and those feelings of this isn't right, do something different. And it's worked out for me very well since I started paying a lot more attention to myself.
Incredible. Yes, most of us are driven by the subconscious, which has all the programs stored in it since childhood and, you know, keeps gathering up. And a lot of things we do unconsciously, like watching television, and we start storing more of these. And what's on television is mostly what's expected out of the people, a way to live their lives. And that's generally, as you say, like being in the matrix. And I think that's beautifully said. And could you share any pivotal moments, any more moments in your life, early life, if you'd like to, that really shaped your success?
I'll tell you that one where somebody said, oh, you're here for the rest of your life, was the pivotal moment in the rest of my career, without a doubt. It was the fork in the road. What are you going to do? And every decision I made after that, I made sure I really kind of took a step back and was an observer to my own feelings. How do you really feel about this? And, you know, the decisions you made in the past turned out pretty well. So chances are the decisions in the future will probably turn out pretty well. And listen, if they don't, that's just part of the game, right? That's kind of life getting in the way, telling you that you're not really supposed to go in that direction, even though you think you are. Nobody's calling you back. Nobody's answering the phone. You didn't get the raise you wanted. So you have to find a job that makes you more money, whatever it is, right? It's those doors are closing for a reason. And I stopped looking at it like, why am I not getting what I wanted? Why are these things happening to me? And I'm glad they happened to me because now I look for them. Those are road signs that tell you make a left turn here, stop here, green means go. And listening to those instincts are what really guide you in the way that you're kind of destined to go. But your point about the early years is everything. A lot of people don't understand those first 7 or 8 or 9 years are really formative, right? And it's all of, we're just sponges, you know, and all of those habits, good and bad, from parents and friends and relatives, you are just a sponge. You don't even understand that you're absorbing it all. And I still do things to this day. I mean, I'm 54 now. I still do things to this day that nobody ever taught me to do, but my dad does. It could be a mannerism or a word or something. And I go, oh my God, my dad does that. Where did I get that from? It's just, it's ingrained in you. And that could be good and it could be bad.
So to be where you are today, were there any beliefs you had to let go, any habits you had to let go, especially, you know, on the lines of mindset?
Yeah, I mean, for me, thankfully, I describe myself as a worker bee. I like working. I get up at 4:30 in the morning. I'm in the pool. I'm running. I hit the bike. I'm doing something active. I'm taking care of myself first before the day gets in the way. I'm paying myself first. That's how I think about it. Before I have to pay my bills, I pay myself what's most important to me. And I think that's a really important mindset is, you know, it's important to surround yourself with people you care about and prioritize them as well. But ultimately, at the end of the day, if you do not prioritize yourself, what's best for you, you can't take care of the people that are around. in the best way possible, right? So it's about being the best version of yourself. And I was always, you know, gleaming things and reading books and going down these rabbit holes of information about, I liked reading books about founders, books about people that had been there and done it before, because I could always steal something for them that worked for them, try it in my life. And you'll see these guys, I mean, the guys today, you know, you look at Elon Musk or any of the big guys that are out there in the news every day. They love it when people tell them no. They love it when people are tell them they're never going to succeed. And there is something inside of them that makes them continue on. And I'd like to think I have a little bit of that, where no means I want to do it more. You can't do that means I want to achieve it. And really being purpose driven. You know, for me, if I'm not fulfilled in the sense that I need to be fulfilled, I don't want to do it. And I'll tell you, I mean, I could give you really good examples. I used to be a really good golfer because I went 4 days a week and I practiced tons. And in 5 years, I really improved. And then all of a sudden, one day I was like, all right, I don't want to golf anymore. And then I got into these Ironman triathlons and I did those for about 8 or 9 years. And then one day I just said, okay, I'm done with that. And my last kind of career was kind of the same. 5 or 6 years, I did the same thing. I'm happy with the results. I kind of achieved what I was looking to achieve. And now I want to try something different. So really analyzing how you feel, what makes you happy, paying attention to if I'm not happy, if I'm not satisfied, I need to do something different rather than just stay stuck in it, which is, again, probably what 99% of the people do.
But how do you know when you need to move on? Because they always say, stay consistent, stay consistent. So that's tricky.
It's hard because nobody can tell you what's going to happen if you change, right? So I can come home one day and my wife could say, what happened? Oh, I had a terrible day at the office today. Well, do you want to quit? Well, no, it's not that bad, right? Or some days you come home, do you want to quit? Yeah, I think I do, right? And I'm just using that as an example. It could be anything. You know, it could be a relationship. It could be another person. Am I really happy or satisfied with this person and who I am when I'm with them? Could be coworkers, could be personal, private relationships. But do I feel good? Do I feel uplifted? Do I feel satisfied? Pay attention to those real basic emotions because they will guide your decisions if you're kind of brave enough to listen to them. You know, and know when to pull the plug. And for everybody, that's different. You know, some people wait till they're at a breaking point, and I've been there. And some people do it too early, and I've been there. So that's all just part of the process. I think the thing that you really have to do is honor your feelings, try and really be an observer of them, right? Analyze them. And then you can't be afraid to make a decision. If you're afraid to make a decision, that is the matrix, right? That's the whole idea of the program, is to keep people from making a decision is kind of the thought process. So you have to be willing to say, what's the worst that can happen?
Yeah.
There's always another place to get a job. There's always somebody else to meet, and there's always more money to make. So like, what's the real downside?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And speaking of which, what do you think are today's entrepreneurs and leaders missing out on?
I would say I think, and I hate to start a sentence with the words I think, right? I try not to, but I think everybody wants to go from zero to being a unicorn on their laptop in a coffee shop. Some people can do it. You know, if you want a dropship business and you find the right product, the right timing, like, yeah, you could probably do really well doing that. But for me, I always thought I would do better by learning from the inside. So if I wanted to one day own an automotive dealership, I'm not just going to go out there and try and find financing to buy one. I'm going to work there and I'm going to find out what every role and responsibility is and how to do every single job so that when I do get to that point, when I own an automotive dealership, and let's just use that as an example, I know how it all works and I know how it's supposed to work, and it helps me identify what's broken. So learning from the inside, you know, but at the same time, I'll give myself the counter argument. You know, that was me when I was coming up through my career 20 years ago and things progressed a lot slower then. Everybody was willing to put in the time and the effort, 3 years, 5 years, 8 years. It did not seem like a long time. Now, 18 months is a long time, right? So that concept of time has just been so constricted because everything now is at our fingertips and everything moves so quickly that you could literally get on a laptop with zero knowledge about doing anything and within 90 days have an operable business that is probably making a couple of bucks per month to pay your bills and your rent. So it's really tricky, right? So for me, I would say, you know, maybe spend some time learning on the inside if you really want to be in the game for a long time at a high level, as opposed to, okay, you have a dropship business that's paying your rent. That's amazing. It's fun. It's great. But does it satisfy you? Like, do you want to sell fish food in boxes around the world for the next 10 years? You might, you know, it's just not for everybody. And it wasn't for me. You know, I'm a lot more tangible. I need something that I need to touch that's got kind of like a fabric to it. Otherwise, I'm just not interested. And real estate was kind of like that. You know, I looked at commercial real estate. I looked at multifamily. I looked in different states. And I was kind of like, I'm not interested in this. What am I really interested in? I'm interested in what I want as a consumer when I travel abroad. I want the experience. I want the location. I want the communication. I want the memory so that when I leave, I mean, one of the proudest things my wife and I look at are our reviews from the properties in Europe. When customers leave, the apartment was amazing. You know, they answered my questions right away. Everything was exactly as they explained it to us. And it was one of the best trips we've ever had. And we can't wait to come back. Like, that gives me goosebumps. And if I was getting a check in the mail for a multifamily unit, you know, in Columbus, Ohio, like, it's great. It pays the bills, but it doesn't get me up in the morning. I'm motivated a lot differently than I think most people.
Yeah, I just absolutely love that because even on LinkedIn, I have many a times come across your posts emphasizing customer comes first and always this principle of yours, which is absolutely incredible because it reminds us that we as souls, as spirits are here to serve each other with all our heart. And it just goes to show the genuineness of what you do. Apart from that, are there any principles that you have that has always stuck with you that have never changed with time? Principles that you hold on to?
I sleep really well at night because I do, how do I phrase this? I work within the guidelines of what the constrictions may be, meaning I follow the letter of the law. You know, in Europe, everybody was talking about accountants and paying your taxes and it's so confusing. And no, it's not. I hire experts. I built a team in Europe of accountants and lawyers and bookkeepers and property managers, and they're amazing people. They've been with me for 4 or 5 years now, all done from my apartment in Los Angeles. Every property that I purchased in Europe from my apartment in Los Angeles, all done completely remotely. And for me, creating that experience for somebody else is what excites me. It's what rewards me. And I think, you know, going back to, you know, the original point that we're talking about, which is how do you know when to make the right decision? How do you know it is the right decision? And why do you make that decision, right? And that really gets down to the individual. And it's a little bit different for everybody. But it's what led me into real estate. I wanted to do something that wasn't really out there, that I wasn't finding. When I go on vacation, I'm tired of sitting around by the pool for 3 days. That doesn't interest me anymore. And today's lifestyle investor is more attuned to experiencing the culture, experiencing the people, right? As opposed to going somewhere, putting on your baseball hat and your sunglasses, sitting by the pool and not talking to anybody. There's a place for that. And there are people that love doing that. I'm not that consumer and I don't cater to that consumer. And it's the same with automotive. You know, I've always talked about it. I want my mom or my sister to go into any of the dealerships that I work with and buy a car and service a car and leave and go, that was a great experience. I loved the people in there. They took really good care of me. They did what they said they were going to do and they charged a fair price. That's a customer for life and they're worth a lot of money. And, that's kind of what I specialize in with Aim High, is helping dealerships focus on what they're losing rather than what they're trying to gain. You know, so often we need more customers, we need more customers, we need more customers. And it's very expensive to get more customers. It's not an exact science. It's a lot of advertising and marketing and measuring the funnel. I would rather see the customer that has been a customer of ours for the past 3 years, because I can track their history. They had a bad experience. They gave us a 0 out of 10 on a survey and they're never coming back again. I want to talk to that customer. Most businesses just say, oh, you know, it's only one person. or you're never going to make them happy, or there's always a problem with them. Well, what was the problem? It can't be that hard. Why can't we fix it? Because the one customer that gives you a poor survey, there are 10 other people that are not giving you a poor survey. You don't even know they're unhappy. They're just never coming back. And your business starts to go like this gradually. And I took that from my niece and nephew from my early babysitting days, right? They were 8, 9, 10 years old. And, you know, they were younger than me. They were faster than me. They're slicker than me. They're, you know, and I catch them doing something they weren't supposed to do. I know I only caught them 1 out of 10 times. The other 9 times they're laughing, they got away with it, right? It's the same thing with your customer. If one customer tells you they're unhappy because this is the experience I had, there are 9 other people that had the same exact experience that are never coming back. Doesn't matter what your widget is that you sell in your store, right? So that's kind of my category of one, is that I focus on the things that most people avoid. So I want to buy properties in Europe. And I want to find an area that has very high touristic incoming traffic, but difficult rules and regulations that you need to navigate through to do it compliantly, right? Because it gives me a competitive edge. I'm willing to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and talk to attorneys in Portugal to find the right property that our guests will then benefit for. And everybody else just goes, oh, I don't want to do that. I'll just look at single family rentals here in Columbus, Ohio. Great. There's 5,000 other people looking at the same property. So, you know, that's kind of always been my superpower, right? Is finding the things that most people don't want to do, digging in, doubling down, and just crushing it in that market. And that's what Global Investment Partnership is. And we've got this big fund that we're launching and hospitality real estate properties, right? So our first property that we're in advanced negotiations with is 40 acres of a vineyard on Douro Valley River in Portugal, which is like Tuscany to Italy, right? It is a world-renowned UNESCO heritage site. So it's protected for the next 1,000 years. They can't build, they can't develop. So it has that cultural aspect to it. It's an hour and a half outside of the main city, and there's a train that goes right into the town. So as an investor, you get the best of both worlds. You get to come and have a portion of something you invested in. You get to experience it in a new country. And in 5 years, you'll get a golden visa and you can live and retire there if you want permanently. So I'm just creating things for people based on what I want, because I can't be the only person that wants this. Right? I'll give you a really good, simple analogy. We have chocolate Twizzlers over here. You know, Twizzlers, the licorice?
Yeah.
You know, traditionally they're red, they're cherry, or they're black. We have chocolate ones here. There's a reason somebody thought making a chocolate Twizzler was a great idea. And 10 other people said, that's disgusting. Who's ever going to eat that? I love them, right? So it's a niche market. Nobody else makes a chocolate Twizzler, but that's my product. Right? I want something that nobody else makes, that I make really well, and I can charge for it.
Well, that is some really great piece of advice there, because generally a lot of advice that we get on the internet is repetitive, but that is something new.
Yeah. I mean, do you want to swim with the masses or you want to swim in your own lane?
Absolutely.
You know, it's really hard to differentiate yourself or get in a competitive advantage if you're going to buy, you know, a single family home that you want to turn into an Airbnb in Columbus, Ohio. There are literally 5,000, if not 50,000 other people looking at that same property. Whereas I can look at a property in Portugal and I'm the only one in 90 days that's even seen it.
What do you think? Does hard work really equal to success?
No, because you can work really hard, but you're not on the right track or you're not being smart about it. So hard work, I don't think translates to success. I think it's a component of success. It's a big component of success. You know, I was talking to somebody yesterday, and being great, being a winner, being a Super Bowl champion is really hard. It takes a lot of hard work. You cannot be a mediocre team or quarterback to win the Super Bowl. You have to be willing to sacrifice. You have to be willing to outwork, outlast the person next to you. And it's hard. So hard work is a really big component of it, but you have to work hard towards a goal that will then compound into another goal that will then compound into another goal. So you have this little roadmap that you design, short-term, medium-term, long-term goals. And man, you just start getting momentum. You know, this thing with Europe, it literally started in 2020, 2020. And I started really researching. I was getting into real estate. I didn't even know what I wanted to do. I just knew I wanted to be in real estate, as silly as that sounds. So the funnel started here and eventually got to where I am now, which is kind of a category of one. And I just learned. And then I checked it off my list. I'm not interested in that. I'm not interested in that. Little by little, I narrowed it down. So I was patient in the beginning. But then once I figured out what it was that I was focused on and I had that light bulb moment, man, then I started working really hard. I mean, 3 o'clock in the morning, 5 days a week, talking to another country to try and put all these pieces of the puzzle together. And it was hard work. It was hard work. It was hard work. Nothing really to show for it other than I was learning more until 2022 and 2023. I think we bought 6 properties in 14 months. Boom, it compounded. And it could take somebody a lifetime to buy one apartment in Europe. And we have a really nice portfolio of them in amazing places. And when I tell people that story, they're like, you did what, from where, and how fast? So I worked really hard, but I kept refocusing and pivoting so that I was always on track to what I was trying to accomplish. And in the beginning, I didn't even know what I wanted to accomplish. I just knew I wanted to be in the real estate game. Okay, start listening to real estate podcasts. Am I interested in what they just talked about? No. Check it off the list. I'm not interested. Go down this road. And I just kind of started finding all these different paths that, you know, were different than what most people are and were doing. And I like that. I like to be one of the only players in the space doing it at a really high level. So hard work. Hard work, no, is the short answer. Hard work with a plan and discipline is the other one. Because you could work really hard for 2 days. That's easy. Working hard every day is really hard. So, you know, I think discipline might even come above hard work, because if you're disciplined, you're going to chip away at it every day. And there are days when I'll work 12 hours and there are days when I just go, I need a day off today. I need to like let my brain unwind and I have to be okay with that. That's not hard work, but it's discipline to really pay attention. So I think it's discipline, hard work, and then focus is just kind of the overlapping, you know, thing that binds those together is what am I trying to accomplish? And am I on the right track?
Wow, that is incredible. How would you define success and wealth today?
It's different for everybody. It should be, you know. Early on in my career, I thought it was about having the boat and the motorcycle and the car. And then I had the boat and the motorcycle and the car. And I was kind of like, all right, like I don't feel any differently. And the sooner you can, you have to get to that point. A million people could tell you it's not about the stuff, but you have to get there, I think. You have to have the stuff and then have that moment where you either go, yeah, this isn't really going to keep me happy in 30 days. Or you're going to go, this is amazing. I have all this great stuff and I'm going to work my butt off for it and it makes me happy. Fine. There's nothing wrong with either of those. For me, I found it dangerous to get attached to the possessions, you know, and to have any type of attachment to materialistic things. And trust me, I love nice stuff, right? But I stopped having to reward myself with an item that cost a certain amount of money because I thought that's what I deserved or what was going to make me happy. Because one day you will find yourself in a spot where you can't afford an expensive watch and you don't want that to make you then unhappy. You just want to be able to say, okay, another day. So for me, you know, it's a different barometer and it should be different for you and different for your wife, right? You can have two people living under the same house, probably have some that are similar and probably some that are different. And you should, I think, you know? So for me, it's different. I'm searching for a deep sense of contentment, right? Happy to me is a word that's fleeting. Contentment to me, in my vocabulary anyway, is more foundational. Am I happy with who I am and where I am? And am I okay with accepting what comes my way, knowing that it's going to lead me to the next great thing?
And one last question. For someone who's listening to this podcast and just thinking of they want to get to that level of, let's say, abundance, where they don't have to think about paying their bills or whatever it is and just have whatever they want. And they are just starting out and they want to build their way to that place where they want to be. What would that one piece of advice be that you'd like to give this?
I think you sit down by yourself one day and you just take out a piece of paper and you write down, in a perfect world, here are the top 3 things that would make me feel like I have abundance. right? Or here are the top three things that I would want to do to earn a lot of money to give me the things that I would then say resulted in abundance. So let's just say I need to make $1 million. All right, what would you do that really makes, what do you want to do? What do you like doing? What are you passionate about? And start there. Is there something you're good at, a skill, a technique that you can then source a business around or see how that fits into a traditional business, right? So start with what gets you up in the morning. There's no better feeling for me than, you know, laying in bed, looking at the ceiling, thinking about tomorrow. And a dropship company is not going to make that happen for me. It may for some people, and that's amazing. So find out what really gets you up in the morning and keeps you up at night, right? What turns you on? What makes you happy? What is going to create that? And then build something around it, right? It's a little bit different than, I think, do what you love forever and you don't have to work a day, that type of thing. I mean, I think that's more of a theory. The way I'm explaining it in my own mind anyway is a little bit more tangible than that. It's okay, that's great. What do you love doing? Okay. Now, how can you develop a business around that, right? And, you know, good things will generally come from doing the things you like with people you like in places you like. And the good thing about money is there's always enough to make. There's a lot of it out there. Start with what am I good at? What do I love doing? And how do I build a business around that? I mean, your story, what you and your wife have done and are doing is that, right? You guys had different paths in the past and, you know, you're on a different path now, and that's great, right? And you focus on what really, you know, calls to you. And you cannot argue with that.
Absolutely. Daniel, thank you so very much for sharing not just the story of scaling businesses and building global ventures, but that deeper truth behind it that you shared with us today, all about the mindset shifts and the grit and the values. So conversations like this, like, reminds us that real prosperity isn't only in the numbers, but of course, it's how we lead and serve and grow from within. And I'm so grateful to have had you on Inner Power Auto Prosperity. It's been a gift for me, and I'm pretty sure it will be a gift for our listeners as well.
I appreciate it. It's been a pleasure spending some time with you and getting to know you a little bit more. So thank you.
Thank you so much.